What is up, everybody, and welcome to episode 12 of Laying the Points with Farley Betts, season 3 of this great show, as I join you every single week now until the start of the NFL season to mostly talk NFL. Today we'll also talk about betting the NBA Finals, what I'm looking at in that, and what should be a fantastic series between Dallas and Boston. And we'll also talk about a little French Open at the very end, give out a French Open pick that I'm considering, haven't bet it yet. Iga Swiatek is dominating in the women's side, but might have to go against her in this next round. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll even make the bet on this show. Maybe I'll even talk myself into it. We'll see. And then we'll get to some NFL teams that might be better than you think this season. I've highlighted 4 NFL franchises that I think could be sneaky, maybe not exceeding their win totals necessarily, but as a good against the spread companion this season. More coming about that. My name is Chris Farley, aka at Farley Betts on X, formerly known as Twitter. Circa winner in 2021, over 200 units in the NBA and NFL, won the last 4 seasons. The professional better now for 5 seasons and going. You can read my free picks all the time, every single day at sportswagers.ca if you're in Canada, or sportswagers.live in the United States. You can still access it in both countries, but you'll get nice affiliate deals, nice discounts to sign up on domestic United States books if you go to .live, and on Canadian books if you go to .ca. You can usually catch me on the BetUS NBA show, but that season is coming to an end. I'll be on next Wednesday. I believe that's going to be a show no matter what. I think that's game 4 of the NBA Finals, as they really stretch it out, don't they? I mean, we're waiting a long time for these NBA Finals to start. Starts tomorrow. I think the next game after that is Sunday. Then the next game after that might be Wednesday. So they're really stretching it out. I'm gonna confirm that as I keep on talking here. But also, you can catch me on VSiN from time to time. And, you know, we'll see what other places you can catch me soon. Usually the summer is a little more, you know, I have a little more space and I have a little more time to, I bet WNBA. That's going really well, by the way. We're 6-1 for plus 10 units in the WNBA so far this season. I think we have a really good grasp on that market. A lot of sharp bettors entering that marketplace, though, and making it a little tougher to get expert or you know, to get better lines, right? To get better odds. It's making it tougher, but it's still not as sharp as it could be. So WNBA doing really well. We still bet tennis. Of course, we bet the UFC during the summer, but it's my time to prep for the NFL. It's my time to rest after the NBA season and how busy that can be. So it's nice to be with you here all on a Wednesday, June 5th, to talk some NFL, NBA and tennis, mainly NFL, like I said, up until the NFL season. But I got to cover a few other things today as well. Let's get to these NBA Finals, an awesome matchup between the Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics. I'll start by saying this, and it's a really honest statement. I want to bet on the Dallas Mavericks. There's some bias that I'm bringing into this conversation. I love the way that Kyrie is playing. I love who he's become on this team. The marriage between him and Luka is awesome. I think Jason Kidd is a much better coach than he's been given credit for. I mean, maybe we have to give him credit now, right? They're in the NBA Finals. But if you look at some of the moves that they made around the All-Star break, bringing in PJ Washington, bringing in Daniel Gafford, you know, getting rid of some of the softer players on their roster over the last few seasons, and that includes you, Kristaps Porzingis. There are some rumors out there that Kristaps and Luka don't get along. I'm not sure how true they are, but I never liked his fit in Dallas. But it's a better roster. It's a more physical roster. It's a sharp shooting roster, right? Like guys like PJ Washington, Derek Lively, they can make shots from the outside. They can pop in the inside. They're young. They're energetic, and they can follow Luka and Kyrie, which is arguably, the best duo in the NBA. I mean, maybe we have to say that they are at this point, the way that they're working. Of course, the backcourt of the Dallas Mavericks makes it really hard for other defenses to at least limit them, right? One of them is usually going to be successful. And then the other one just starts like facilitating more, dishing the ball out more. Like that's the big difference between the Mavericks and the Celtics, right? Like Jason Tatum is supposed to be the best player on the Celtics, but two drawbacks to Jason Tatum that we see all the time is he kind of disappears in the fourth series so far in the playoffs because the ball isn't in his hands enough, right? And he doesn't really go after it to get it in those big moments. This is not disputable. I mean, I've seen it over and over and over again. Now, they're so talented, and Jaylen Brown has stepped up, I would argue, bigger than or more so than Jason Tatum in a lot of these situations. Kristaps coming back, if he's healthy, is a huge advantage for Boston. Kind of tips the scales offensively and size-wise in their direction, I would say. But the intangible of Luka and Kyrie and the way they're getting along, the way that they fight as underdogs and kind of love to prove people wrong, and the dynamic of their roster, which has a ton of chemistry. And I'm not saying that Boston doesn't, but you just have guys with immense veteran experience leading the Dallas Mavericks and everybody else kind of following. Whereas the Celtics, Jason Tatum is not that like clear leader on the court, right? Like a court general, like yelling at people, like a Kobe Bryant type of, you know, Chris Paul, LeBron James. He's not like that. You know, he just kind of, he's out there. He makes shots. Sometimes he does hold the team in his back, but he doesn't really have to because of how talented they are. More so, the Celtics haven't really had a challenge, have they? Now, the Pacers were playing damn good basketball leading into that series, but they also looked really tired heading into that series against the Celtics. You know, Halliburton, not fully healthy. And it ended up really hurting the Pacers. They got swept. Not a huge surprise there. I think if the Knicks faced the Celtics, that's a better series. But the Pacers just played better at the end of that series against an injured Knicks team. The Celtics also faced an injured Cavaliers team. They faced an injured Heat team. No Jimmy Butler for the Heat for a lot of that series. No Donovan Mitchell for a few games in the Cleveland series. And, you know, young teams too, right? Like players that can't really stand against the immense talent of Boston. And yet Boston still allowed teams like Cleveland and Miami to win a game. Much more challenging road for the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference, where every team, all the elites, you could see them going to the NBA Finals. The Clippers, they were without Kawhi in a few games, as far as I remember. I mean, this is kind of going back now, but Kawhi wasn't completely healthy for that series either. So that's, you know, that's a nod to the Mavericks that helped the Mavericks in that series, but they largely dominated. 4-2 win over the Clippers. The Thunder, the number one seed in the West, come into that full of energy, young, spry, exciting players. The Mavericks outdid them over and over, 4-2 win in that series. And then the Timberwolves coming off one of the most impressive runs in the playoffs, beating the Nuggets in those final two games, 6 and game 7. I mean, it didn't get more impressive than that. Minnesota looked like the team to beat in the West at that point. The Mavericks prove that once again, you are not better than us. You're not better than our backcourt. You can't even play as good defense as us. I mean, I would say Dallas played considerably better defense. Of course, the Timberwolves have some offensive setbacks. But the road for Dallas to get here, a 4-1 win against Minnesota, is a lot more impressive than any series wins that Boston had heading into this NBA Finals. But I'll tell you that, you know, for the price of Dallas, they're around plus 180, plus 200 for the series. I would rather pick my spots for them to win games. Like, I like Dallas money line in game one. If they don't win in game one, I'm going to love them money line in game two. Now, can the Celtics start 2-0 at home? Sure. But we've seen the Celtics before in these situations. Adding Kristaps back to the lineup may actually cause a little bit of derision, because they haven't been used to it, right? They've been compensating without him. Al Horford, certainly an older guy that offenses have been able to take advantage of. Kristaps isn't exactly super agile and quick either, okay? So they could probably take advantage of him too. But adding him back into the lineup, hasn't really been in this situation before in an NBA Finals. I don't know. You know, it could do more harm than good, especially in game one. The Mavericks are just playing at a really high level cohesively on both sides of the court. I think they have the two best players on the court. So I'm just going to look to pick my spots in the Mavericks, and I'll probably pick Boston even against the spread in a few of these games as well. But, you know, we just got to watch the psychology of this series as it goes, because we know that what Boston does in these situations is they underwhelm, they underperform in you know, intense, nerve-wracking situations. We've seen it before, right? We saw it again last season against the Heat, a team that is very clutch, very game ready when they're led by Jimmy Butler and they're healthy. And that's how the Mavericks are, right? You almost can't even understand, besides the magnificence of Luka and Kyrie, Luka going off in game five against Minnesota, scoring over 20 points in the first quarter, I think. I mean, that was insane. But that's what they can do, right? But other than the magnificence of Luka and Kyrie, it's like, how is Dallas winning these games? It's just good, sound basketball. It's good. It's a good supporting cast. It's really good defense, much better than people give them credit for. And if they're the more physical team right from the start, which I would imagine that they will be, because they're not afraid of it. They've been that way the entire playoffs. Like, Boston only gets physical when they have to. And I don't think Boston's going to like it when Dallas punches first in this series. And, you know, Luka and Kyrie, kind of intimidating too, right? Like, guys like Derek White, Jrue Holiday, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum are going to have to step up in really, really big ways. And can they? Like, I love Derek White. Jrue Holiday is still one of the best defensive guards in the NBA, no doubt about it. Like, Boston can absolutely win this series 4-1, 4-2. But I'd rather pick my spots on the Mavs. You know, I like them at these inflection points, like a game one, whoever gets that 1-0 lead, that's huge. And I like them when they have to respond after a loss. They've been fantastic in the NBA playoffs after a loss. I don't think that they've won two straight games in the entire NBA playoffs. Let me check that, but I believe, I mean, that is accurate. They have not lost two games in a row. So if they lose game one, look to bet them in game two. I think they might win game one, and then I might look at Boston in game two. But I do lean Dallas in this series. I do think they win 4-3 or 4-2. And maybe that final game is game six at Dallas. So, but it should be highly entertaining, right? Kyrie versus old team, kind of a villain aura that Kyrie has against his old team. And I think he's going to be at his best. And if Kyrie's at his best, we know Luka's going to bring in and be a game changer and take over some games. Their supporting cast has been fantastic. I like Dallas. At this point, it sounds like kind of a popular, sharp opinion, which is annoying for somebody who's been handicapping and following the NBA as closely as we have the past 5 years, but I can't dispute it. Dallas Mavericks. Let's move on to this NFL part of the show, the main part of our show, to talk about teams that might be better than you think. I'm going to start with the Bolts, the Los Angeles Chargers. And obviously, Jim Harbaugh coming over there is a big deal, right? A guy that comes from Michigan, turn that program around, and is certainly going to be that is the biggest coaching upgrade you can possibly get, going from Brandon Staley to Jim Harbaugh. Like, Brandon Staley is not supposed to be an NFL coach. You could see it in so many ways, right? This is going to be a more professional organization. It's going to be a tougher one. But the Chargers have a KC problem, right? They have a Kansas City Chiefs problem. They played them close, really close in the 2022 season. And I thought heading into 2023, despite the coaching flaws and weaknesses of Brandon Staley, the roster is just so loaded. Like, I thought those were going to be really great games. Turns out the one game that really mattered in the middle of the season wasn't close, 31-17 Chiefs. And then their week 18 game was dumb, right? Like, Easton Stick was playing. It didn't really matter. But Justin Herbert, this is an obvious statement, but it's true, is going to be the biggest differentiator in their success. And Jim Harbaugh knows how to coach quarterbacks, right? Former quarterback, it's what he does. He's a specialist in a lot of ways, but I know that he has to be enjoying working with somebody with the raw talent of Justin Herbert. He's probably also going to get in Justin Herbert's ass, right? Herbert, as talented as he is, you know, we came into this league, he was like instantly put at the top of a lot of like top five, top 10 quarterback lists in the NFL because of his raw talent, his arm strength. I don't disagree with that. But as we're learning, Justin Herbert just has some setbacks with his mentals, right? His clutch factor. And we saw that a lot last season. Fourth quarter, some drives just kind of stall, some overthrows, you know, not as just hasn't learned. I mean, if it can even be learned, I don't know, but hasn't developed that clutch factor where if you're in the fourth quarter against Justin Herbert, like you're scared, right? Because you know that he's about to will his team back. He's done it a few times, but he hasn't done it enough. And while I expect the Chargers defense to improve, I mean, they still got plenty of guys there, right? Khalil Mack, Bosa, still have very talented, Asante Samuel Jr. They still have very talented depth on their defensive roster. As long as their defense can just keep them in game sometimes, it's going to be interesting to see how Justin Herbert changes under the Jim Harbaugh era. That's going to be the biggest differentiator here. But I do think that he just has to improve somewhat, right? Like, this is what Jim Harbaugh does. He was brought to Michigan, and he built a team that could finally combat the elite, Ohio State, right? This is a very similar situation in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh comes along. The Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes are looming, shadowing over the Chargers and that whole division and the whole conference every year. Jim Harbaugh is not afraid of that. Now, I think it's going to take some time to build a team that's really there, right, to compete against the Kansas City Chiefs of the world. But I do think that they could be better this year. And a big reason why they should be better this year is look at their schedule, right? 8.5 wins is where most books have their win total. Of course, the over is juiced, and the over is probably juiced because of their schedule. They start off at home against Vegas and then at Carolina, at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh will be tough, but that could be a 3-0 right out the gate for the new era of Jimmy Harbaugh. Then they face Kansas City, okay. Then Denver, Arizona, New Orleans, Cleveland, Tennessee. Cincinnati's tough. Baltimore's tough. Atlanta could be tough. Kansas City, Tampa, Denver, New England, Vegas. If there's improvement on this team with the amount of talent that they have in this team, that's at least a 9-win season. And even if they lose both games to Kansas City, right? I mean, I got them. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense why it's 8.5. But I would lean over. Again, it's juiced at this point. It's not as sexy. But I would damn sure look at the Los Angeles Chargers becoming a better ATS team. Right, like they're going to hang in some of these games. Like if they catch a 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 against Kansas City at any point next season, again, I'm going to be looking to take the Chargers because Harbaugh, his mentality, he has to make this talent perform better on the field. Like that is what he does. We've seen it before in the NFL, him with San Francisco, it took him to a Super Bowl. And, you know, I like actually that they face Kansas City at home in week 4. You know, as an early Kansas City team, sometimes Kansas City doesn't really get going until later in the season. Like, I think they cover that one. And I think you can just look at them as an ATS companion. But it's the most obvious pick that I have in this section of the pod. But Chargers stand out as a team that, even though it might be somewhat obvious, look at their over and look at their ATS performance to improve this season. All right, a team that's definitely not going to be as popular of a talking point on podcasts or NFL articles, whatever, the Arizona Cardinals. I talked about them a little bit last week, but let me expand on this. First of all, James Conner, really solid running back, and now Kyler Murray gets Marvin Harrison Jr., a legit playmaker, you know, like has the bloodline, right? He understands it. That is going to be a playmaking duo. Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. Like you can already see it. Kyler can make passes that few other quarterbacks can. Marvin Harrison Jr. can find openings and ways to catch balls that few wide receivers can. And now the jury's out on the rest of their wide receiver depth chart. Like, it's not that great. But they got a good tight end in Trey McBride, who started to surge last season. I think he's going to be even better this season. On defense, I love that they took defensive end Darius Robinson, a legit defensive end from Missouri, right? Playing in the SEC against, like, pro offensive lines and over 8 sacks last season. I mean, I think he's going to fit into this Cardinals organization and what they need most and be a central figure for them probably. Certainly going to compete for more snaps than his colleagues. Yeah, I mean, he's a monster. And if he can bring more legitimacy to that defensive line, like, they still got guys in the backfield, right? They still got a pretty good secondary, Buda Baker. It's a young defense, but Jonathan Gannon, this is what he does, right? He comes from a defensive background. Last season, I thought he was a pretty damn good coach, considering how shallow their roster was. I mean, 9-8 against the spread. That's a pretty good covering team, considering that they were 4-13 in their overall record, right? So I think Jonathan Gannon, the evidence is that he's a good coach. I mean, we saw what happened to the Philadelphia defense when he left, right? I mean, considerable devolvement there. So Gannon in his second year, they also drafted Max Melton from Rutgers, supposed to be a legitimate shutdown corner. We'll see how he pans out, but I like that pick as well. And again, gonna hear a little click here, but the Arizona Cardinals schedule, not easy. Okay, they absolutely have some tough games in there at Buffalo, Los Angeles, Detroit, Washington, San Francisco, Green Bay, Los Angeles Chargers, Miami. I mean, this first 8 or 9 weeks are pretty brutal. But again, I'm not looking at win totals here necessarily. I'm looking at these teams being better than what odds makers give them credit for. And right out the gate, like I told you last week, week one, Cardinals +7. I'll take that all day. The Cardinals are going to be competitive against the Bills. I don't care that it's at Orchard Park. It's a fresh Kyler Murray, you know, one season off of, or now in his second season off of an injury. You know, his leg should be fine. I'm not worried about Marvin Harrison Jr. getting involved in these games very early. I mean, that's a professional wide receiver. Everything about him checks out that way. James Conner is a professional running back. The Bills defense, they lost some guys. I don't know if they're going to be as good this season. Cardinals are going to be competitive right from the start, in my opinion. Again, really tough slate, but they're going to get some really big lines probably in most of those matchups. So look for the Cardinals to be a little feisty this season. All right, up next, the Denver Broncos. Sean Payton's Denver Broncos. Now, again, just like the Cardinals, although 6-10, I'm sorry, it's actually the opposite, right? They're 6-10-1 against the spread last year. But somehow Sean Payton, again, with a tough roster, right? Like Javonta Williams goes down, wide receivers go down. Defensive players go down. They still were 8-9 last year in the AFC West. I mean, that's not bad. First year with Russell Wilson, like that wasn't a good marriage with Sean Payton. We kind of knew that he wouldn't stay put, but it didn't feel like it was Sean Payton's team last season yet. This season it does. And that obviously starts with Bo Nix, right? Bo Nix entering the NFL, 61 games under his belt in college, the most ever entering the NFL. No other quarterback is bringing more experience into the NFL. Deadly accurate, like we saw it all throughout his college career. Very accurate quarterback, very Drew Brees-likes. Like the Drew Brees comparisons that he's drawing are legitimate, right? He's 6'2", like not the biggest guy, but very accurate, a student of the game. Love that they got Tony Franklin from Oregon, a familiar target for him. And the fact that he's Sean Payton's boy, right? Like Sean Payton wanted him, the GM got him. Everybody seems like they're in line with that. That's huge. When the GM, coach, quarterback are all in line with each other, right? We're already hearing positive sentimentality coming from Sean Payton and the pressers about Bo Nix and his potential. This is a very good thing when those three figureheads are all on the same page. And their depth chart is not as bad as you think. Javonte Williams is a very, very good running back that was looking to be, you know, so much better. Right. And he's had some unfortunate injuries, but he is legit. Courtland Sutton, a big body. Big body wide receiver. They got another big body there with Tony Franklin. Better offensive line than you think. Garrett Bowles, Mike McClinchy. Top five rating according to PFF last season. A better offensive line. So Bo Nix is not going to be constantly harassed. Now, unproven guys on defense, really. And, you know, still a formidable defensive line. A pretty good backfield. They still got Patrick Surtain. You know, so their defense is probably still going to be a concern. Their offense is going to be a developing thing as well, obviously, right? But a win total of 5.5, that's a little low for me. That's a little low. I think Sean Payton is a damn good coach. I think he needs to be in control, but I think he's a damn good coach. 5.5 is low. I have not bet the over on that, but I'm about ready to. You know, the AFC West in general, I think, is improving, right? Like the Raiders have more of an identity with Antonio Pierce. You know, I just talked about the Chargers, but the Broncos 5.5 is low. Look at their schedule, guys. These are the teams that I can see them beating on the schedule. Seattle, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Vegas, twice, obviously. Carolina, could beat Cleveland. And then there's Indy. Okay, so, you know, we're not expecting them to beat the Kansas City, Cincinnati, Cleveland, probably not. Baltimore, probably not. But, I mean, at New Orleans, first of all, week 7, Sean Payton goes back to Louisiana. I don't know, guys. I mean, I'm already looking at that as a Sean Payton possible win. And there's at least 6 games in there that they could win. And maybe an upset or two is incoming too, right? I mean, they got some nice home games at the end of the season against some of these tougher teams. At home against Indy, at home against Kansas City to end the season. That could be a throwaway game for Kansas City. At home against Cleveland on Monday Night Football on December 2nd. I don't hate their schedule. And I see more buy signs than I have the last few seasons, at least, on the Denver Broncos. Again, most of my points about these teams are to consider them as an against the spread companion this season, that they're going to be better than we think. It's not necessarily saying bet the win total over, but 5.5 is damn low for a team that could be very, very improved this year as long as they stay healthy and as long as Bo Nix is as much of a professional ready quarterback as we think, and I think he is. Finally, a team that nobody thinks we're going to talk about on this podcast because I'm a New York Giants fan. But, you know, it can't be biased, especially when you're talking NFL betting, right? That's an easy way to lose. The Washington Commanders. Now, 6.5 is an interesting total for this team. Kind of tells me that sportsbooks think that they'll be better, right? I mean, that's a better record than last year already. They're a 4-13 team, but they don't know how much better. I'll start by saying this. Jaden Daniels, across the board, all positive, right? His mentality, his skill set, playmaking ability, speed. Jaden Daniels is a great fit for the Washington Commanders culture, right? That is a city and a town that absolutely loves that they have a starting quarterback who's black. Sure as hell is nothing wrong with that. You know, but it's a more liberal town than others. Like, that should not be a liberal and conservative talking point. But unfortunately, it is. And, you know, the Washington, D.C. culture is going to love having Jaden Daniels there. You love that for them because he seems like an RG3 2.0. The same skills and athletic ability, maybe even better in that department too, but a better throwing arm on top of it. And his wide receivers are legit. Of course, you have Scary Terry McLaren still there, but I love the Luke McCaffrey ad. Every team, speaking of race, every team needs a short white boy who can get annihilated in the middle of the field, right? Like, you know, that we see that with the Edelmans and the Wes Welkers of the world and the Patriots. He's going to be a good, tough fit for them. Austin Eckler. I always mix that up. I don't even have to tell you about Austin Eckler. I mean, he's fantastic. You talk about a pass-catching back, explosive running back out of the backfield that can change things. They have great running back depth now. Cliff Kingsbury, now with the team as their offensive coordinator, he is meant to be an offensive coordinator. He's not meant to be a coach. Okay. Like that's another thing that I saw 1,000 miles away, right? Just like Brandon Staley. I don't know how good of a coordinator even Brandon Staley is because he's had very limited experience, but Cliff Kingsbury, I think he can do some things with this offense, right? It was no joke what he did in college, you know, developing some of these quarterbacks, especially. I like him in this role, and I like him kind of in a revenge spot, right? Like, let go and Arizona thought he was the man, right? Showing off his big house and draft day and everything. All that kind of went to shit. Now he gets to play for a team also in the NFC that has just been like vastly improved. I mean, I love their draft this year as well. Ben Sinnott, I think that's how you say his name, big boy draft tight end from Kansas State. I think he can make an immediate difference for them and compete with Zach Ertz. By the end of the season, I expect him to be playing more than Zach Ertz. And Dan Quinn, right? New coach. He can coach up a damn defense. We've seen plenty of that in his career with Atlanta, with Dallas. We've seen it time and time again. Dan Quinn knows how to coach up a defense. He deserves a head coaching gig attempt again. Solid leader. They didn't need Jerzan Newton, you know, in their interior defensive line because that's where their strength is. But he's still a great add from Illinois. Gives them great depth. That defensive line in general is very good, especially the interior. Added Bobby Wagner to the linebacking crew. That's a huge add for veteran experience. And, you know, don't get me wrong. This is a bad defense last year, really bad. 7.5 yards per pass allowed, 31st in the NFL in that category, and 30.5 points per game allowed. That was worst in the NFL. So the Commanders have a lot of work to do, but I like the pieces that they've added. You have to love Dan Quinn as their coach. And as a 4-13 team last year, we know that they'll be better. We know that they'll at least be more competitive. I would like to take the over on this, but now it's getting a little bit juiced on Washington as well. Again, looking at them more as an against the spread companion, their schedule's tough. Their schedule's going to be tough because they're in the NFC East, you know, Philly, Dallas, the Giants never have issues with Washington usually always win at least one game against the Commanders every year. I know that as a Giants fan, it's one of the only successful trends that we've had the last 10 years or so. But the early part of Washington's schedule, Tampa Bay, Giants, and there's the Bengals, that's a loss probably, but Arizona, Cleveland, there's Baltimore, Carolina, Chicago, New York again, Pittsburgh. They could win a lot of those 6.5 wins early in the season. They could be cruising into like week 12 or week 11 against Philly in their first game against the Eagles. They could be in week 11 as a, they could be a 6-4 team. Sure. I could absolutely see it. And then they only need one more win. They got Tennessee, Nolens, Atlanta down the road. So I would lean over on their win total again. As I said 1,000 times in this podcast, why would I not lean over on all these teams if I liked them this year? But I, again, as an against the spread companion, Washington is going to be very competitive this year. I think Jaden Daniels is just one of those quarterbacks who gets it. Everything is lined up for him to succeed. Better offense than you think. Improved defense and better coaching. So, you know, as much as I hate to admit it, I think the Giants are going to be the lowest tier in the NFC East this season. And Washington is another part of that. You know, I see some improvement for this team. All right, finally, let's end this show with a little free pick here in the French Open. Now, I got my ass kicked taking Marketa Vondrousova against Iga Swiatek, the world's number one, who is on an absolute heater. Beat up Vondrousova 6-0 in that first set the other day. Now they move into the semifinal. Coco Gauff against Swiatek from Poland. And although I don't want to bet against Swiatek, Coco Gauff dropped that first set to Ange Jabeur in the last round in the quarterfinal. And I kind of love that heading into this matchup. Coco has looked sensational on clay, except for that first set against Ons. You know, just looked a little taken off guard. I mean, Ons came into that playing really well too. But then what did Coco do? She took over in those final two sets, 6-2, 6-3 in the second and third set against a really good, like highly motivated, surging player, a top 10 player like Ons. And then, you know, and before that, not a lot of competition for Coco Gauff, but that's not her fault, right? Like that might be part of the reason why she dropped that first set against Ons Jabeur. You know, if you look at her competition leading up until that quarterfinal, not very good. But in the first set against Zviatek, which I know Zviatek has been sensational, +2.5 for plus money. So Coco Gauff just has to win 4 games in that set, and you win plus money with her. I like that. I think Coco is going to come out and not be, you know, laissez-faire, right? She's going to be hyper-focused in that first set. It's Iga, so she knows she has to be. And she dropped that last first set, but she's been looking sharp, very sharp, since also still alive in the doubles. She's in the semifinal for that as well. So she's enjoying clay. You know, didn't lose a set up until that match against Ons. And I mean, if you look at those last rounds, as much as we expected her to win against inferior competition, still, her opponents won only 3 games in the 4th round, 6 games in the 3rd round, 7 games in the 2nd round, and 2 games in the 1st round. I mean, she's not making a lot of mistakes. And her serve has been pretty damn good too. So I'm taking Coco Gauff +2.5 in the first set against Zviatek. I will write about it also at Sports Wagers. So look for that, but consider it a free pick gimme here on the show for all you listeners, who I very much appreciate. That'll do it for Laying the Points with Farley Betts, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Again, we will be here every single week leading up to the NFL season, talking more NFL. And what I'm not going to do is what everybody else does. I'm not going to like break down the NFC East and break down the AFC West. We're just going to talk with better talking points about what we think of these NFL teams leading up to the season, with topics like we've had today. The teams that we think might be better than you think is what we talked about today, along with a free pick in the French Open and a betting preview of the NBA Finals. Thank you all so much for listening. See you back here next week. Farley Betts signing out. Let's win some damn money.